You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Just let it play. I just took off my warm-ups.
I love it.
The snap-ons, I just threw them off. I'm ready to play. I'm ready to go 48 minutes.
Put me in, coach.
9 innings. All 4 quarters. I'm ready to skate 20 minutes of a 60-minute game.
Now that sounded like a shot.
Was it a shot?
It sounded like a shot.
Hockey's so tough, man. You don't understand. It's so tough.
You're going to start trolling people already?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Totally. Why wouldn't I?
That's true. Par for the course.
Why wouldn't I start trolling people here on the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast 046? Yes, the final countdown to open us up. We do have a big announcement regarding this show, regarding the Pinto and White Shadow Show project.
Huge.
At least the Pinto and White Shadow Show.
The Pinto and White Shadow Show project?
Yeah.
Is that like, what are some of the shows that have been called the project? They never seem to go well.
No, because it's a project.
Yeah, it never works out.
They should call it something else.
We should.
But the Pinto White Shadow Show project, I will call it. And we will we'll let you in on what's going to happen here with myself and Brad Jones moving forward.
Yeah.
Could have something to do with a bigger platform.
Ooh.
We'll tell you a little bit. Yes. We'll tell you a little bit more later on in the show. For now, I'm Daniel Gunnarsson, Brad Jones, my co-host. You can find me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. You can find Brad Jones at
The Bison Guy.
You can also find this podcast on the Facebook pages of KFGO and 740 The Fan. You can also find it when I tweet it out, so make sure and follow us. As well as finding it on iTunes, The Pinto and White Shadow Show, or on KFGO.com. With that, we love your comments. You can comment in the comments section underneath the podcast page or drop us a line at pinto.whiteshadow.
Important note, it's been a couple weeks since we've done a podcast. Did we find Marcus from Mayville?
Yeah, he commented.
Okay.
He's in this. We'll talk to him later. He'll talk to us. He's been found.
Just making sure.
He's been found.
Just
we're okay.
Sure.
We're okay. So you can do that. You can send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. All that good stuff. So, 4th of July is coming up. Brad?
Yes.
What would you rather do on the 4th of July? Go to a parade.
Okay.
Sit on a pontoon in the middle of a lake.
Interesting.
Or shoot off fireworks.
Okay, well, we got to weigh the evidence here. Number one, I'm pasty.
Okay.
And sitting on a boat or on a pontoon, I think is actually what I'm going to end up doing this year, but that has health risks associated with it.
So I'm
taking one for the girlfriend.
You were outside the studio, outdoors, for
yes.
about 4 minutes. You came in and you were just red.
I was a little concerned. Yeah, we're gonna need to find some aloe or something. So the pontoon maybe wouldn't necessarily be my first choice, even though that's actually what I will be doing, just with the health risks.
Okay.
The parade, I mean,
really?
Parades are fun, but it was more fun when people didn't look at you with a disapproving look when you went out and tried to get candy. You know, I don't know. Whenever
you're too old,
28-year-old dude doing
you're
that.
You're too old
yeah.
for that.
So, I mean, that's taken a little bit of fun
probably
out of the
knocking over the toddlers.
Parade. Well, you know what? I like Tootsie Rolls. Not the small ones. Only if they're the longer ones. I got to get after
full
that.
Full-size candy only for this guy.
Full-size candy or the little Tootsie Roll things that are flavored.
No.
Oh.
You can have those all day.
Oh, those things.
I'll
take chocolate. Them all day.
I just want chocolate
You want
ones.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
So parades, I probably shouldn't go. By default, that probably goes fireworks. I've always kind of been the firework grand marshal in our family. So usually it's here's your budget, put together something, and I take care of it. But I'd probably go fireworks.
See, to me, it's pontoon all day.
Yeah.
Because not only...
You can tan.
Yes, that's one.
Yeah.
Two, you can sit and watch the fireworks from the lake. I don't need to be a part of that, all right? I don't need to be a part of the bottle rockets. I've had too many memories from when I was a kid, the
bottle rocket
wars.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
There was a time we were shooting fireworks off at this kid in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Neighborhood. Our whole town is a neighborhood.
Right.
And he was a kid. We picked on him in high school. I'm not proud of it, but we did it.
Okay.
And so, shooting fireworks at him, And he's firing back at us, and then we kind of run away, and we're thinking, oh, yeah, it was great. We got him, whatever. And we have this little softball field kind of at the end of town.
Sure.
And then on the other side of the street is this big brick building. We're hanging out in my buddy's golf cart. From behind the building comes a kid we're shooting fireworks at. And we're looking at him and go, what is in his hand? In his hand is a long kind of a board, maybe a 2x4 that he's holding with both hands. Strapped to the top of it is a...
Roman candle?
No.
No?
This is better. 21 gun salute thing. One of those missiles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So this thing fires probably like 100 of those like little missiles.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So he starts walking towards us with it. Like, what is he doing? Lights it. Everybody just hits the deck. Four guys on this golf cart. Two of them get behind the golf cart as these things.
Smart idea.
Me and another buddy start running to the outfield, and we're zigzagging, trying to miss these things. Yeah. So many explicitives just being rolled out after one after another. We're trying to duck and juke and jive and just, oh, my goodness. We didn't pick on that kid again.
Yeah.
We learned our lesson
victory
after that.
Right
yeah,
there.
For him. We didn't go after
Did you get hit by any?
No. Nobody got hit by any, but there was very, you know, right over the shoulder, sure. Over the head. I mean.
All right. I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast. I got one fireworks story, too. This was actually at Halloween, though. Me and a bunch of my buddies were out, and we weren't really doing anything, just going trick-or-treating as, you know, whatever, 16, 17-year-olds trying to scare, like, our high school teachers or something. I don't know, just being dumb.
Obviously.
Yes. There were a couple of other – there's another group that was trying to cause a little bit more – have a little bit more fun. They were lighting off fireworks. They had some M80s and all that stuff that they were lighting. Well, their group got separated. One of them ties one half of their group, ties it to a street sign, lights it off just as their other group is coming up, and we're all three are kind of right there. Goes off. They think we lit it, trying to go after them. So they come up and they take an artillery shell. So one of the, you know, big ones that you'll see at a fireworks show. They had taken the engine off of it. We're walking through a buddy's backyard. They throw it at us. It goes off. I'm wearing like a scream mask. The one where it had the deal that ran down the arm,
right.
So you could hit it, the blood would run down the face. And just like this big, I don't know, like an old choir robe or something. It goes off, catches me on fire underneath my right arm. I didn't notice it right away. I take three steps, look down. My buddy's like, dude, you're on fire. Yes, I am. So I stopped, dropped, and rolled. It had burned through. Ate up a lot of the robe, had burned through the sweatshirt, and it started to burn through the T-shirt that I had on underneath. I went home shortly thereafter. After being lit on fire, I was done. That was my big firework experience. So it was good times.
I would have been better too if the
and
whole
one of my
thing.
Buddies, although one of my buddies, I think, did chase down the one who threw it, just beat the snot out of him. So it was great.
Great. Hey, sticking up for the White Shadow. It would have been awesome had it like somehow singed or burnt the wire that had the blood. And you just bled all over, freaking out when you come home.
Oh my,
what happened? What happened? You know, freaking out. Like, that would have been.
Mama Shadow would not have been impressed.
I'm sure she
that.
Wasn't impressed when you came home with holes in your clothes.
No, she wasn't really impressed with that either.
Hoodlum.
Good
That's
times.
What you are.
Good times.
That's what you are. All right, let's get to this podcast
let's
here.
Let's do it.
And we'll start with.
Local.
And under the local topic for this June 28th recording. NDSU football came out that offensive lineman Zach Johnson is going to be lost from the team for the season. He's going to have knee surgery. And instead of trying to get him back maybe halfway or three-fourths of the way through the season, head coach Chris Kleiman has decided that we're just going to shut him down, give him a red shirt, and let him sit out. Now, why this is significant is because NDSU's biggest question marks going into the season, along with the defensive line, was the offensive line. Not a lot of returning starters, only two. This knocks it down to just one returning starter now. Brad, how significant is this loss for the NDSU team?
I mean, usually, as a general rule with the NDSU football team, there's a couple of things that you don't have to worry about. You don't have to worry about running backs, you don't have to worry about the offensive line, and you don't have to worry about linebackers. Those three things have stayed pretty consistent over the, you know, last 10 years throughout the Craig Bowl era. Those three things have been pretty consistent. The one year that they had the down year with Nick Mertens in there was when their offensive line was really depleted. And so that it at least raises my eyebrow a little bit. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on offensive line, but it takes a little while for a lot of these guys' bodies to get where they need to be for Division I football. So some of these youngsters are going to have to step in. They've got a couple of guys that'll be able to fill in that have some experience, but it's at least going to make me raise my eyebrow a little bit, and it'll be something to keep an eye on as the season gets started.
Here's a couple of guys that will be able to come back. And by the way, there's two Zach Johnsons on NDSU's offensive line. This Zach Johnson, if you're going for spelling purposes, is CK at the end. There's another Zach Johnson with it's just the C at the end, not a CH. But just for spelling purposes, so you're not confused. Here's some other guys that are going to be on the offensive line. Joe Hag is the sole returning starter. But you also have Jesse Hines, who's played at times for the NDSU offensive line. Jack Plankers, a guy that NDSU was high on last year and saw some time last year as well. So they won't be completely out of guys with little to no experience. But again, this offensive line for NDSU, like you said, Brad, has been just so dominant for the past, oh boy, you look at how I equate their offensive line dominance to how well the NDSU running backs have been doing over the last 6-7 years. I mean, I can't remember the last time NDSU didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher. So with that, you get a guy that comes back with some experience, a good amount of experience, and now he's done for the season. It concerns me as well, but just because NDSU has been able to take guys that have been so dominant at certain positions and been able to plug in the next guy up and the next guy in line, I think they'll be okay. The other part about this too, Brad, that gets mentioned but maybe doesn't get as much credit as it should or maybe just kind of goes under the wire, the two, what do they call it? It's not 2 days, but it's the repping system that they do for NDSU practice. They have a certain name for it where the starters rep and then the backups rep two at a time. So you have the starters instead of the starting offensive lineman repping and then the backups just kind of sitting there watching like a lot of college teams do.
Sure.
They'll have everybody going through and repping at the same time. So everybody's getting repetitions. Everybody's getting an opportunity to play their position and everybody's getting an opportunity to learn the playbook. That, to me, is a big thing for the NDSU football team to do, and they installed it under Coach Craig Bull, and I know Coach Kleiman will continue with that. But it's something they installed in order to make sure guys were ready in case their number was called. It also creates depth, which we've seen is a big factor for NDSU on the defensive line. So that's why the worry for me isn't as great as maybe it should be. I probably am a little bit too secure and too confident in the way the NDSU offensive line is able to play. Still, though, it's a little bit scary.
It at least raises an eyebrow. I find it hard to go scary when it's now and it's not a guy who even last year that we said was this guy's dominant. I mean, he was very good.
The other thing, too, though, to remember is with the offensive line, you got a quarterback in Brock Jensen who probably knew what the offensive line was supposed to be doing at this particular time, this particular play, so he's able to hold guys accountable. You know, what happened there? I just got sacked. You know, Zach, you missed your guy. Billy, what happened on that left side? He's able to do that. Carson Wentz might not be able to do that. You also have to remember, too, running backs are able to read their offensive linemen pretty well. They have a good working relationship, if you will, with their offensive line. John Crockett, a veteran running back for this NDSU squad, is going to have to learn behind an offensive line that is young. Now, the best part about the way NDSU runs their offense, they want to run the ball.
Yes.
Which is a better and just a more secure way to get offensive linemen into the game. Go out and hit somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Straight down run, we're just going to hit somebody.
And ask any offensive lineman, what would you rather do?
Right.
Run block or pass block? And it's not close. We want to run block because then we're hitting them instead of them hitting us.
Exactly. We get to dictate what we're doing
yes.
instead of them. So the way NDSU's system works, it almost just kind of works out in a way that the offensive line, it'll be okay. We're going to see some bumps. We're going to see some trials in the first couple weeks, especially with the way the schedule works out for NDSU. You have Iowa State in there. You have Montana in there. I mean, it's not easy for this NDSU football squad. But again, something to just kind of watch moving forward. I want to move on to NDSU athletics and kind of a end-of-the-year wrap-up.
Sure.
The 2013-2014 season for college athletics came to a close with the College Baseball World Series coming to a finale. And we were going to look back not on the whole college athletic season for every school, but we're going to look back specifically on NDSU.
That's why it's in the local section.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And we're going to go top three favorite moments from NDSU athletics this season.
There's a lot to choose from.
So I'll let you start.
I figured you would. I'm going to start. My number three moment is going to be, and mine's going to stay pretty, I mean, there's not going to be a lot of drama with my three. Number three is going to be the national championship win over Towson. It felt like a celebration of the last 3 years. It wasn't so much, it was very different from the first year, and I went to all three games. It was very different from the first year, where the first year felt like we didn't know if we were going to win. We thought we'd have a shot, but we knew that Sam Houston was good, and it was a battle, and it was just a heck of a game. We were pretty confident. My dad and I were, and brother and I were joking on the way down as we drove past the big casino on I-35 on our way into the Dallas area, that we should have stopped by and just hammered the NDSU to win and cover the spread, just to be able to make some money for the trip, which we should have done. We didn't. But, that was the kind of feeling that it had. But it was just fun because of the volume of people from NDSU, supporting NDSU, that were there. It was definitely greater than the previous 2 years, and was just a fun celebration of that team and the seniors for their 4 years of work. So that's my number three.
Okay, my number three, and I've been thinking about this for a little bit because there are so many moments.
Yes.
I think that my number three has to be ESPN's College Game Day.
Sure.
Coming to town. The Kansas State win was great, but I kind of put that a little bit further down because it was the first game of the season. And even if NDSU does lose it, it doesn't hurt them overall. You know, Kansas State's a good program, so be it. Yeah. NDSU lose to them. Them winning, huge, because it ends up meaning College Game Day comes to Fargo, North Dakota. But to be able to be put on a national television show and probably one of the most watched pregame shows out there in the nation for 3 hours to showcase your college, that's huge. Yep. That was a big moment from what I remember. That's my number three.
Sure. If we were talking important moments, this would be a different ranking. If you're just saying my favorite, I actually have College Game Day a little bit further down on that list. My number two, you alluded to it. It was Kansas State. Just the way that game went, was watching it with a few buddies, and was just the excitement, the energy, the tenseness that there was throughout that game, and the way that they won it. That's going to be my number two, just for the energy and the way that everything transpired with that. So is it as important as game day being here? No, but as far as my favorites, that's where I'm going to put number two.
Yeah, no, I see that in it. It was, to be there was fun. There's difference between experience as a media member and as a fan.
Yes.
And I got to experience as a media member. So it's a little different kind of experience for me. My number two is Craig Bohl leaving NDSU.
Okay.
The reason that it was my favorite, or at least, yeah, I'll say favorite because...
Because that's what you have written down on the paper?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's just the way it went about. It kind of a national writer saying, looks like Craig Bohl is taking the job with Wyoming, and then that 24-hour period of Twitter just going crazy and people just wondering, why would he go to Wyoming? Why would he choose Wyoming? I hear this is happening. I heard that was happening. This makes sense. I don't know why it doesn't make sense. You know, just that whole thing going on and everybody freaking out, along with the fact that he does it during the middle of a playoff run, and it comes out during the middle of a playoff run. It just from the standpoint of how I was involved with it, the announcing of it and being at press conferences, that's why to me it was one of my favorite moments.
Sure. Okay. Just being around the importance of the event. Yeah, fair enough. We might be our favorite, I think, for the last one.
It might be. Let's see.
It's got to be the victory over Oklahoma for the basketball
team.
Definitely, yeah. You were over at my apartment watching that game. I know we were in double digits as far as how many people we had packed into my little one-bedroom
We were at 12, I think, at one point.
I think we hit a dozen. Yeah, and it was just, I mean, I kind of felt like Jim Valvano at the end of the game because we just kind of all turned to each other looking for somebody to hug.
Yep.
Because it was just such a cool moment. My dad and brother were there. A really, really cool celebration of that basketball program. And, you know, it was fun to see the type, the recognition that they got. I mean, how many years, if you'd have asked anybody just a few years ago, oh yeah, by the way, Charles Barkley is going to spend, granted he was making fun of our coach,
right,
but he's going to spend a fair amount of time talking about your team, talking about your coach. Okay, yeah, Chuck, sure, yeah, Charles Barkley's going to be doing that. And then there it happens. Crazy.
That was, to me, the top moment because yeah. of just the exposure it gave NDSU. Watching the game itself was entertaining
yes.
as heck. I mean, I haven't, since starting this job at KFGO, I haven't had an opportunity to be a fan at NDSU games.
Yeah.
I just haven't. And I love going to Vikings games now because it gives me an opportunity to just sit in the stands and scream and yell and do whatever, have fun with it. That game gave me an opportunity to sit back and just, I'm going to be as partisan as possible here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cheer for NDSU because I would love to see them
Lawrence
win.
Alexander's moments, oh, Carlin yeah. Dupree's moments.
Dupree. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just one of the best experiences I've had watching a game when I haven't been there live.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think our honorable mention for me was probably the national championship. Obviously,
yep.
Kansas State as well were a couple of the honorable mentions. And I'll say this, NDSU's baseball team
sure, yeah.
winning the Summit League Championship was pretty entertaining because I did get to see a lot of that game.
Yeah.
And getting that was entertaining.
And getting a look on ESPNU for them.
Yeah.
And putting up a fight as the number 64 team in the field going up
yeah, exactly.
at the number one team.
Exactly.
And having the game that they did. I mean, yeah, the baseball team definitely deserves a little bit. There's a lot of places that deserve a little bit of love just because, I mean, what, nine, you know, having one of our wrestlers, Stephen Monk, was number 3 pound for pound wrestler.
I think he ended up being an All American.
Yeah, it was All American. I mean, you could go down the list of the sports, and oh yeah, here's moments that we had
yep.
from each one.
Yeah,
so.
This year was huge for NDSU athletics.
Mm-hmm.
What to look forward to in 2014 for NDSU athletics? Top 3 things.
Top 3? Oh gosh, can
we'll,
we say
we'll
new,
st- we'll stay
new
with
coaches
the list.
And a new athletic director?
That's
I mean,
it. That's
that
all
could be that. That's it. That's the list
that's
right
it,
there.
That's the list.
I mean.
Well, here, I'll start it off. I'll go like this. Number 3, how NDSU and their fans adjust to having the basketball team playing off campus. How it adjusts to this team being out in Shields Arena for the next couple of years while they go through the BSA renovations. I think that'll be curious to see because, you know, aside from the fact that BSA was really awful, one of the neat things about it was still on campus.
It's at least on campus. So it's,
right.
What do you want to do? Now let's walk over to the game.
Right, exactly.
Now let's drive all the way across town to the game.
And I think maybe people were doing that anyways to get the BSA.
Well, I'm talking students.
Students, yes. Okay, that's a great point. Yep. Yeah. So now you have to figure out a way to get all the way down to 32nd Avenue and Veterans Boulevard, essentially, to go watch a basketball game in a hockey arena.
Yeah.
We'll see how the fans adjust. That's what I'm going to be curious to see.
I'm not worried about the season ticket holders because they're going to walk the game and are going to get to the game anyway. And frankly, that might be more convenient for a lot of them being down in South Fargo. But yeah, the students, I'm a little concerned about the students. I'll be curious to see if there's going to be any shuttle services, what the athletics department is going to do to try to accommodate getting the students to the games. Hopefully they come up with something because it'd be really disappointing to, you know, NDSU basketball, in my opinion at least, doesn't, the fan support isn't quite there. The crowds aren't quite as good as what a lot of people think they are. Even when there's a lot of people there, the crowds are still kind of a little meh.
I think
in my opinion.
I think the BSA did have a lot to do with that, truthfully. I think that the BSA's atmosphere was awful because the way it was set up. I mean, you're not really that close to the game the way it feels like you're close when you're at Frost Arena.
Sure. And I won't take that away, but at the same time, now you're going from a meh environment to a way off campus environment. You know, it's just making sure that you get the students back in 2.5 years.
That will be, to me, one of the more interesting things to watch for. Number 2 will be, how do these new coaches, new athletic director, whoever it may be, how do they do? How do they adjust in their first season? You have Dave Richmond, Chris Kleiman, obviously guys that, or Marin Walseth, I should say, as well, for the NDC women's
sure.
basketball team. two are have been in the system. They know what NDSU is about. They've been up, brought up through the program. I think they'll be fine. Coach Walseth, that program needs to get going. There's no doubt about it, because everything else for NDSU has succeeded. I mean, across the board. Maybe men's golf, but, you know, even that hasn't been as bad as women's basketball has been. So there you go. We'll see how she adjusts. That would be number two. And, of course, number one on everybody's mind is the football team.
Sure.
The departure of all those seniors.
And I'm curious what the expectation level from fans is going to be coming in. Because as a general rule, fans are not reasonable.
No.
And I'll make fun of a lot of fans for that. I'll make fun of you a lot of times for that. But I'll be curious to see what the conversation is coming into the season.
Do you think that people will be talking four-peat? Or do you believe that they're under the assumption that NDSU has lost so much, and I mean fans in general, that NDSU has lost so much that a four-peat would be pretty spectacular in the sense that it shouldn't happen. It might not happen. Or do you think they'll be coming in with so much confidence going, yeah, four-peat's possible?
It's a really good question. I'll be curious. It's a little early to tell because the chatter hasn't really gotten going as much yet.
Right.
Get to the first week of August once the team starts camp. I might have a better answer for you. Honestly, right now, I don't know. I can really see it both ways. I really can, because you go from being so much better than everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
So much better. And that even coming down a fair amount still puts you right in that mix, and it's just a matter of how far do people think we came down? Because I can see them start listing off names of all these guys are back, and you know, and Carson Wentz is going to be the second coming of whoever, and all of a sudden we're starting to talk ourselves in. Well, we should be able to beat these guys. Our defense is still going to be good enough to end. So I can see it going both ways.
I think that when it comes defensively, I think NDSU will be good. I really do. Yeah. Do I think they're going to be best defense in the FCS? We'll see. We'll see, because I don't know about this defensive
line.
That's right.
It kind of gets an incomplete right now.
The big thing that I think will get a lot of attention, and maybe undeservedly right away, will be Carson Wentz. And the fact that, oh, he's so big, he's so athletic, he's a North Dakota kid. Already heard people talking about how Carson Wentz is better than Brock Jensen. Already heard that chatter.
Mm-hmm.
He might be a better athlete.
I think that same chatter about Nick Mertens.
And Brad, you and I know Nick Mertens was a better athlete than Steve Walker.
Sure.
And I'm willing to believe Carson Wentz is probably a better athlete than Brock Jensen. Doesn't make you a better quarterback.
Yes.
It does not make you a better quarterback. That's the key, is will Carson Wentz know what to do when the situation on a 3rd and 5, do you run, do you pass, do you check down, do you play, you know, for the next possession? I mean, it's so underestimated how many times Brock Jensen, instead of trying to force the issue, would go, all right, let's run here, or let's throw it away, or let's make sure that we can get out of this without a turnover, because I know what's playing behind me.
Yep.
I know how good the defense is. We're going to be okay. I think Carson Wentz, we'll see. I have no idea what his pedigree is like. I have no idea how good he'll be. I hope he's a smart and heady quarterback. But those will be the things we'll be watching for come August. All right, let's go to
regional.
Quite a few topics here in regional. We'll start with the NBA and the Minnesota Timberwolves.
The Timberwolves.
Okay. How do you feel about their draft picks? Glenn Robinson III and Zach LaVine.
You know, it was really interesting. I was listening, and this was before the draft. I'm trying to remember who it was that was on, because as we all know, I'm a big Dan Patrick fan. Somebody was on with Dan Patrick who was saying that, you know, somebody's going to take this LaVine kid out of UCLA. He wasn't a good player at UCLA, but all of the athletics, the measurables, everything's got people comparing him to Russell Westbrook. But he wasn't a good player at UCLA. And of course, that's the guy that the Timberwolves end up with. I think they probably gave the pick to David Kahn just so he could draft one more point guard.
Just why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Kahn!
So I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. What did they want? They wanted shooting. Well, guess who was off the board? The two guys they wanted, either Stauskas or Dougie McBuckets. I guess I'm not a huge fan of the pick, but
what about Glenn Robinson? Because I you and I can agree that I feel like Zach LaVine is one of these guys that, oh, he's so athletic.
Is he related to Adam LaVine?
I don't think so.
Avril LaVine.
No.
Okay.
I
would have gotten more excited if one of those two were true.
I think that they are drafting on potential. Well, everybody's drafting on potential. That's not really a great statement to make. But you're drafting a guy because he can run fast, he can jump high, and there's this opportunity for him to be Russell Westbrook, where he's so raw, but athletically he's just so much better than everybody else. He could be that kind of dominant player that if he gets a couple things down.
Had you heard anything about Zach LaVine coming into the draft?
No.
That's the thing. You'd heard at least a little bit about Russell Westbrook coming into his draft. Zach LaVine, when I saw that they picked, I said, who? Was literally my response. I had no idea. No idea who this kid was.
How about the Toronto Raptors and the guy they drafted?
The guy that Chris Mannix said, you know, I've been studying this draft for 2 or 3 months. I had no idea who this guy was. Not a clue.
Oh, I know.
Bruno? I thought they took, maybe they were trying to take Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
But, so I'm not really sure what your Raptors were doing.
Bruno Caboclo, I believe is how you get that out there.
I would have loved to have had you take Adam Silver's spot.
Boy, no.
Yeah, that would have been great.
You know he's got the cheat sheet, though. He's got the pronunciation guide in front of him.
That wouldn't have helped you.
No, it wouldn't have helped me at all. But Bruno, by drafted pick number 20 by the Toronto Raptors. This guy, they get Fran Fraschilla on there, and he goes, this guy is the Brazilian Kevin Durant, from what I've heard.
Uh-huh.
He's 2 years away from being 2 years away, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
What are we thinking? This is, I mean, the ultimate swing for the fences. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, I just stood there looking at the TV going, why?
See, and I was keeping up with the draft. I was playing my fast pitch softball league plays Thursday night, so I was keeping up with the draft on my phone between innings. But, Zach LaVine, everybody in the dugout when I said it, I think one guy said, oh, yeah, UCLA, right? Everyone else is, huh?
Right.
Great.
Zach LaVine.
Perfect.
And then they ended up going with Glenn Robinson III.
Yep.
At the 40th pick.
Which, at the 40th pick, I mean, whatever. You're not really going to screw anything up with the 40th pick.
The question is, again, can he shoot? Will he be able to knock down three-pointers for this team that needs scoring?
Yeah.
Or at least outside shooting. I don't know how much they need a ton of scoring from the inside outside. They have Kevin Love still, but you need outside shooting. And this guy, you hope, can do it. 6'6 guard. He has the pedigree, which...
To not play defense and to want to shoot the ball a lot.
Well, I mean, if that's what you want, sign him up.
There you go. Maybe they should have drafted the big dog.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have gone that direction.
Maybe with the original big dog.
Yeah.
I do like the pick. I think he is a guy that you look at and go, it's a second-round pick. And you go, I mean, if he fails, so be it. But if he comes out and does well, all right. The LaVine guy, I mean, what?
It says everything that you called him the LaVine guy. That says everything you need to know about that pick.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see. How about his reaction after getting picked, by the way? You haven't heard how he reacted to it?
No.
He dropped his head to the table at the Barclays Center, and he stood up, and he said, bleep me. And the way he said it, everybody went into, okay, is he saying it out of exasperation? Like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I'm going to Minnesota. Or is it, oh, my goodness, I'm going to the NBA. I'm in the NBA.
I would assume it's probably the latter, but there may have been some of the former going through his head as well.
You have to watch the Vine or the video or whatever is out there. You got to Google it. But it was one of those things that was up for interpretation through, you know, local rubes and local media for the
next
hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yep, that's what they're doing. Not the fact that the guy could be an athletic freak. He could bring some kind of transition game to the Timberwolves, help him out. You know, just how did he react?
Athletic freak generally means this guy isn't a really good basketball player. He's just really fast and can jump high.
My favorite thing is leading up to the draft, I was reading kind of different takes on where these certain players would go. My favorite was Aaron Gordon, you know, the next Sean Marion. You know, this guy can't shoot, but he's so athletic, you know. That was the hope for him, is that, oh, maybe he'll be the next Sean Marion. I thought about that going, all right, Sean Marion was really good, but you're right. He would mostly get points on putbacks.
Did you ever read the 7 Seconds or Less book?
No.
Phenomenal book. If you ever want to borrow it, let me know. I bought that great read. And yeah, they never ran plays for Sean Marion. He got all of his points on just hustle, on cuts, being smart, and knowing what he could and couldn't do. And from everything, again, that you read leading up to the draft, Aaron Gordon understands what he can and can't do. So he worked on those things to make sure he was elite at those things outside of shooting. Knowing that he wasn't a great shooter, he made sure he was able to do the other things, and he gets it, and that's half the battle sometimes.
Sticking with the Wolves conversation, is there still hope for them to get something done in a Kevin Love trade, or do you think the best opportunity to trade him has passed for the Wolves?
I mean, the best opportunity to get, I think they would have gotten more. I still am surprised they didn't get something done with Golden State. I know Golden State does not want to let go of Klay Thompson, and I think on Golden State's end, that's ridiculous. If you can get Kevin Love, you go get Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And, if you trade David Lee and Klay Thompson for Kevin Love and Kevin Martin, you take the Kevin Love side all the time, because Kevin Love is a superstar. Klay Thompson might be a superstar.
Who knows how...
And Love's in his prime.
And who knows how Klay Thompson does without Steph Curry.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Steph Curry is the reason that he works so well for whatever reason in Golden State. Maybe that was the only place he works, and he goes to Minnesota and he ends up not doing what you'd hope. And for the Warriors to pass on something like that, not wanting to give up Thompson, again, I was a little bit flabbergasted myself.
And it still wouldn't surprise me if this deal got done, just because there wasn't something like Boston was trying to trade, two draft picks in this draft and, a couple other things. So there were picks tied to that. And now, but with the Golden State, it's players. So that deal still could get done. It wouldn't surprise me if those talks did eventually get something accomplished. But yeah, I'm a little disappointed, because at the trade deadline, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough, because the only team that's gonna trade for him is a contender.
Yeah, if you wait that long.
And at that point, the draft picks that you're gonna get, a team that's not very good is not gonna trade for him, because they know that at that point, there's no way they're gonna re-sign him.
You know, the other thing that you could see here is maybe a team that somehow has draft picks tied to another team. And
that's fair.
They're contending, and then they say, okay, we'll give you this draft pick and a couple other guys for Kevin Love.
Yep. We're hoarding the Knicks draft pick or something
right.
like that. So, yeah.
Something like that could come up.
That's fair.
But I still agree with you. The best opportunity to trade him would have been for draft picks and try to build it through that. I mean, there's something to be said that you build a team through trials and tribulations, where a team wins 15 games the first season, but they grow together, they understand each other, they know their roles on the team, instead of trying to go out and maybe patch some things together. And Klay Thompson comes in and goes, I'm not gonna listen to Flip Saunders. He probably doesn't have attitude problems from what I understand, but you never know how these players react, going, I didn't want to come to Minnesota, I didn't want to be here, I used to play at Golden State and I used to be an important part, sure I'm the man here, but once my contract's up, I'm done. At least with these rookies, you can go, okay, you guys are Minnesota. This is your future right here. We're going to figure all this out together. Who works best where and what we're going to do? Hence, rebuilding. And I think that's what the Timberwolves should have gone with. I think they missed their best opportunity. But again, there is that dark horse where, hey, we have the New York Knicks draft pick right here. We're the Denver Nuggets. We're like four games out of sixth place in the Western Conference. We'll take Kevin Love. Here's a solid young point guard, solid young forward.
Yes.
Here's that draft pick. Let's go. That could happen down the line. Flip Saunders, we'll see how he does. We'll see how he does. Now, I'm looking at my list here as we move on.
Yeah. was wondering when you were going to notice that.
What week do you think we will see Teddy Bridgewater start for the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah.
Never. He won't start for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I believe that. Yeah.
I believe I mean the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
What week do you think he'll start?
If I gave you the over-under of eight and a half.
Okay. 8.5. I would take...
Under meaning earlier, meaning later.
Well, I would take the over.
You would take the over. I agree. Week 10.5.
Hang on. Just give me a second here.
Oh, jeez. I really need to do some research music. also, you got it? You ready to go?
So you said over under 10?
10 and a half.
10 and a half. I would go over.
You would go the over on 10 and a half.
Yes.
Do you actually think the Vikings are going to be good next year?
No.
Okay.
No, but week 10 is a bye.
Week 10 is a bye.
So you give this guy an opportunity.
So if I gave you 11 and a half, you're taking the under.
Right.
Okay.
So week 10 is your bye. So basically you get him ready for week 11.
Okay.
And the rest of the season.
Okay. Run down just real quick. Just run down the first nine games or whatever that they play.
Rams.
Okay.
In St. Louis.
Okay. At the Rams.
Patriots at home.
Okay.
New Orleans in New Orleans. Falcons at home. Packers on the road. Lions at home. Bills and Bucks back-to-back weeks, both on the road. Washington, D.C. football team at home.
Okay. I will take... Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Coming off the bye sounds about right.
Because you look at this and you're going, well, there's road games there. You don't want them to start at a road game. And, yeah. Well, I don't think you do. I think you want them to start at home.
You can argue both ways because... The home crowd, the last thing you want your guy to do is get booed at home in his first start. Because then that, I mean, you know, you take a little bit of grief from the road. Okay, that's going to happen. Unless you're playing, you know, the Bills at home, then maybe, yeah, you start him at home. But
right, and
you can make arguments for either way. It kind of depends on the makeup of the kid.
And you look at it, too. I mean, week 11, after the bye, they're at Chicago. But then they have three straight home games against the Packers, Panthers, and Jets. I look at it maybe being week 12. They put them in and go, the last 6 weeks are yours, kid. I mean, here you go. Last six games, I should say. Yeah, 6 weeks. At the Lions, at the Dolphins, home against the Bears. 4-6 at home. You build some confidence in them. You let them know this is going to be your team next year. You have a full roster, a full season in front of you. To me, I think that's going to work out best for them. But I don't think you see them until the end of the year, really.
I agree.
So
I agree.
Hey, look at that. We agree on something. Minnesota Twins All-Star game coming up. Twins, by the way, I think are down again. They've lost a ton on the road.
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah, it's 2-0 in the bottom of the third. Anyways, All-Star game coming up in Target Field. Twins, how many of them do you think will be at the All-Star game? How many Twins do you see going to the All-Star game?
You said give me two, and I scoffed coming in.
Yeah.
Then I started digging a little bit deeper. I could see two.
Okay,
I think Glenn, well, you're obviously going to see one because you have to.
Yes.
Glenn Perkins, his name is just, he's kind of become the Brad Radke of, he's just the name that we know.
Yeah, at this point,
So we're just going to, he's going to be the one that keeps getting it because he's been there, what, three times already?
Once.
Only once?
Yeah, last year was his first time.
Why did I think he'd been there the year before?
Because they thought he deserved it the year before,
okay.
but he only got there once.
Okay. So I think he goes again, and he's got the numbers to back that up. Plus,
yep.
They loaded up with relief pitchers now just in case, so we don't have the fiasco that we had at Miller Park in the early aughts.
So I see that.
So I see Glenn Perkins. The next guy I'd make a case for is probably Suzuki. Highest batting average of
an American League catcher.
The next two guys down, Salvador Perez, who's likely going to get the start, and for the Royals,
right?
And Deonner Navarro, I think. And Navarro's got a little bit more pop than Suzuki, but hitting over 300, I believe Suzuki is. So I think he gets the second one. You're going to make the case for at least one more guy.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, it goes in that same order. It would be, well, not in the same order. I have Perkins going. I think that's a lock.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
I think Phil Hughes goes, despite the win-loss record.
8-3.
Which is pretty good. Yeah. He probably goes 8-4 today because his team is taking on Yu Darvish, and they're just not good. But you look at the way he's thrown, his ERA, he hasn't had a lot of big innings. I mean, his walks to strikeout ratio is unbelievable.
Here's the problem with ERA. ERA, especially in our years, so the last 10, 15 years when we've really been paying attention to that kind of stuff, the definition of a good ERA has changed.
Yeah.
And a 3.4 ERA 10 years ago is pretty good. A 3.4 ERA now puts him 16th.
Still respectable.
Not bad. It's not bad, but it's not, you know, it's not elite. And then you start looking at some of the guys ahead of him. Tanaka's going, Felix Hernandez is going, Mark Burley's going, Darvish is going, Scott Kazmir is going to have a chance. You've got, you know, John Lester. you've got some guys up there. Rick Porcello is probably going to go. It's going to, you know, even Scherzer, who's got a worse just based on, you know, some of it's going to be track record.
Yeah.
Scherzer's probably going to go despite a worse ERA. He's going to be on the border there.
The other part of it, too, is you have to remember is with the All-Star game, it's like, okay, who started on Sunday?
That's true.
The bye before the All-Star game.
And I haven't looked at
game.
That at all.
And I haven't looked that far ahead. He could put himself out because of that, or he could put himself
well,
in because
said
of that.
He's pitching today.
Pitching today. So today that, is so the 20th.
Today's Saturday. So he gives him Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, put him in Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. His next scheduled start would be the All-Star game.
Right.
So that's something in his favor.
No, it wouldn't, because the All-Star game isn't until the 14th through
Tuesday. It's that Tuesday. Because Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is 4 days off. Thursday, he pitches.
It would
pitches.
Be the 3rd of July.
So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday are his 4 days off. He'd be scheduled to pitch Tuesday.
The 8th, and then there's still games.
Oh, I'm missing a week. You're right, yep. You're right. I'm missing a week. So he would pitch. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, he'd pitch Sunday.
So he might not even get a chance to go because he wouldn't be able to throw.
Yeah.
That could be the ultimate decision. I think it will be between him and Suzuki. I don't think Suzuki gets put in because A, he doesn't have like ridiculous stats, and or picked to get in, I should say, by the fans.
Salvador Perez is going to get the fan vote.
Right, exactly. I think that Suzuki though, because he's been around the league long enough, he'll get the opportunity to go by.
Yeah,
he's been
around for a while. He's a name, and I think they're not going to put somebody entirely in based on, oh, it's, you know, the hometown. But if there's a borderline, I think that could be a point in his favor of, let's give the hometown team one more.
The outside shot that I had in my mind is Brian Dozier. Leads because of his position and the way he plays, leads the position in homers. On base percentage is high. He leads the majors in runs.
Wait a minute here. Don't start this on base percentage again with him.
He leads near the top in runs in the majors and the American League. His defense is above average for a second baseman. His average, though, I think is going to hurt him. His batting average is going to hurt him.
Let me recant. Since we had the Brian Dozier argument, he was at about 320 when we had the argument.
Has he dropped?
Which is bad. He's actually gone up. He's up to about a 360 as of right now on base percentage. That's only behind Altuve and Robbie Cano, ahead of Kinsler, Pedroia, Zobrist.
Right.
So you ended up being clairvoyant in that his on base percentage would get there. You were wrong at the time, but now it's gotten there. So.
Yeah, for second basemen, he's doing well. It's just that the name recognition for him, you have, and the second base position this year is pretty steady. Altuve is just having a heck of a year.
Yeah,
Cano is going to get in off of name recognition, and Ian Kinsler as well,
and Dustin Pedroia.
Dustin Pedroia, Brian Dozier would have to be chosen by the coaches, and I just don't think
that's
going to happen.
It's hard to put a 245 guy in.
That's the problem, too. If he's hitting 280, then you're going, okay, we could probably do this. He's hitting 240.
And he's striking out a ton.
He is.
A ton.
He is. He's very raw. He's just discovering his power right now, and I think that's kind of – it benefited him early in the season, but you've noted – if you paid attention, his homers have really gone down in the last month because nobody throws inside on him because he'll just pull the heck out of the ball. He's got to learn to be able to go to the opposite field for average. Sure. Hence, the pitchers will try to figure out a way to beat him. Throw it inside, he'll hit bombs. But he'd be my fourth, and I just don't think he's going to make it. But outside shot, you never know. So, cool. That was a fun discussion. We'll move on to
National.
A lot of things to talk about here. We'll start with this. This is a fun topic.
It is.
This is a fun conversation. This is a fun question.
This is, and before you get into it, I'm going to preface this by saying this is probably one of the top two or three questions that you've come up with in the history of the podcast.
Took me till now to come up with it.
It's great. I'm just saying, I really like this question.
All right. You're in Los Angeles, hypothetically speaking.
Okay.
You only have enough money to go see either the Dodgers or the Angels play. Now, take everything into consideration when you're doing this.
Yep.
And take this into consideration as well. Clayton Kershaw is pitching for the Dodgers.
Yep.
All right. Mike Trout is starting center field for the Angels. Who do you go watch and why? Any factor would work in this one, but you have to remember the two keys.
Yep. Can I sit in the shade for both games? Is there one?
I get the shade for both games. You're fine in the shade.
That's important. Man, it's really tough. I'd probably go Kershaw.
Really?
I would. Couple of things. Number one, It's us lefties got to stay together.
Okay.
And I'm going to get to see him on the field and act an active participant in the game for a good chunk of the game. An hour's worth of the game I'm going to get to see him. Mike Trout, maybe he's going to get 4 or 5 at-bats.
Maybe four, probably likely four. Yep.
And maybe a couple of balls hit him in center field.
Okay.
So I'm getting to see more activity from Kershaw. So if he's pitching, I'm going to go see Kershaw.
And see, I would also add to your choice my personal preference. You're going to Dodger Stadium.
Sure.
So outside of that, though, I have a tough time. I would go see Mike Trout because, one, I love center field. I love the position. I love how much it controls the defense, and I love how much of an impact it has on the game. Two, the guy is not only dangerous when he's at the plate, but he's dangerous when he's on base.
Yeah.
He can steal bases. He can just cause a lot of havoc for teams when he's on base. The other part is I don't know how Kershaw's going to do. It's not a given he's going to throw 7 innings every game.
True.
9 times out of 10, he will.
Yep.
But maybe you just found that 1 time out of 10 that he goes 3 innings.
Okay.
And you're out of a good Kershaw outing, and now you have to sit there and watch
whoever
throw. You know Trout's going to play 9. You know Trout's going to be out there the whole time.
Sure, but he could also go 0-for-4.
That's okay.
Is it, though?
It is to me because one of the more entertaining things about Ichiro Suzuki when he came up, because I got an opportunity to go watch him his rookie year, you just wanted to go see him play. Yeah. Didn't matter if he went 0-for-5. It was just so cool to watch Ichiro Suzuki play.
Sure. And I'd say that same argument for Kershaw because with Kershaw, it's a story either way. If Trout goes 0-for-4 or 1-for-3 with a single and 1-for-4 with a single and nothing else, I mean, okay, he just kind of, you just saw him do nothing. If Kershaw, either way, it's a story with Kershaw. If the team that he's playing blows him up, that's a big story. We just saw somebody hit the crap out of Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
So you're seeing something that you're going to talk about either way with Kershaw. You're not necessarily going to get that with Trout.
And I see that. To me, it's the opportunity that maybe he'll do something great. You know that Kershaw is going to get his strikeouts. You know Kershaw is going to maybe pitch a wonderful gem, and he's going to be out there, and he's going to have the ball. I mean, obviously, he's going to have the ball every inning, whatever innings he pitches. But to me, just to watch it, I relate to this. If I could go back in a time machine, and if I could watch Sandy Koufax, who I think is probably one of the greatest pitchers for a short period of time in the history of baseball.
Had one of the highest peaks, sure.
Or Willie Mays during his prime, who would I go see?
If you give me one game.
And I'm just looking at one game.
Yeah, if you give me one game, I want to see the pitcher. I want to see the great pitcher. If you're going to say, okay, you have to watch a series. So you're going to get to see Koufax once, but then, and then you're going to, he's going to sit on the bench the next three games. Or you can go see Willie Mays play 4 games. Give me that. If you say I can only watch one of these players over an entire season, I want to watch Trout. If you give me one game, I'm going to take the pitcher because the pitcher is going to be more involved in that one game than what the hitter is.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from.
I see where you both,
we both have great arguments.
You're not making a wrong choice.
No,
there.
You're not. You could get down to the argument, too, that the pitchers that get these contracts are paid on, they're obviously paid on performance, but the players that play every day are paid more so on the fact that, obviously paid on performance, not to put myself in a box here, but I think they're paid more
because I'm curious where you're going with this.
I think they're paid also on the fact that they put butts in the seats on a daily basis. Because going to games down at the Metrodome, when Kirby Puckett was playing, the only reason you'd go is, oh, Kirby's playing.
Yeah.
And then when it was Torrey Hunter, even though the team was good, Torrey's playing. If you got to see a great pitcher, that was kind of the cherry on top. But you went because that guy was playing he was going to play. Joe Mauer, same thing.
I'd be curious with that. I wonder if you could tell if there was a difference as far as the number of fans that showed up. Like when you look a couple years ago with Felix Hernandez with the Mariners. Awful team, but Hernandez was incredible. I'm curious, and I don't know the answer to it. I'd be curious to see what that did. Was it your typical Friday afternoon was 10,000, but then if it was, Hernandez, it was... I'd be curious what that adjustment is.
Probably assumption would be with a bad team, when Hernandez throws, more people show up.
Yeah.
With a bad team. But when you're talking both these teams are good, you know, the Dodgers, whenever Kershaw pitches, kind of maybe be the same attendance as it would be with anybody else because the team is good.
Sure, yeah.
But with Mike Trout, you get people coming out every day to see Mike Trout. Special talent, special kind of guy. And it's tough to do it because that's such a large market. With a small market like Minneapolis or, say, Milwaukee, for instance, you know, people are going to come from wherever in Wisconsin because, oh, Ryan Braun's going to play. We got to go see Ryan Braun.
Sure. You'll get more of the out-of-towners for that. You'll get the locals, though, who will look at, okay, you know what? I'm going to go on the days that Felix pitches.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, you know, either way.
It's an interesting dynamic because you could look at how franchises pay the players based off of what they do. A ton of money, obviously, to go to a pitcher because you look at the wins it can generate, and every fifth day you're almost guaranteed to win because this guy is so good. But when you come to overall revenue, you need people in the seats. And one out of five gates that's good just isn't going to get you the kind of revenue you want. You want more revenue. You want those three out of five.
Yeah.
So to speak.
The argument I'd make with a bad team, though, is a bad team with one great player. But especially because, I can go see him every day.
Right.
And they're still going to be terrible.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then
that's the thing with baseball. With the Timberwolves, with Kevin Garnett. Yeah, Kevin Garnett's great, but the team is bad. I can go see this talent, but nobody showed up because you could see it on a consistent basis. If Kevin Garnett showed up once every five games, now you're going to see that game. You're going to get a packed house that game.
Right. Yeah, it's the same thing with any kind of superstar.
Yeah.
They're paid based off of what they can bring in for you. And I just kind of feel that maybe they pay these everyday players a little bit more on the side that they're going to put more people in because they play every day, as to opposed to a pitcher that is more valuable to a team because every fifth day you're getting a victory.
Sure.
And we know how big a top-tier starting pitcher is for a rotation because it just makes everything that much easier. You can just look through the history of baseball and you go, this guy's throwing today. We're going to be okay the rest of the days. We could win a series because maybe another guy goes out and has a good game. We'll move on from that and go into the NBA. And for whatever reason, I love the NBA draft more than the NFL, probably because it's only two rounds.
Two rounds, yeah.
And to me, I'm not getting these offensive linemen who I've never heard of or a guy that played for North Texas. I'm going, who is this?
Well, the equivalent would be the international players.
It would be the international players, but you still only have to deal with like 50 dudes. You don't have to worry about 250.
I agree.
So in that case, I like the NBA draft a little bit better. A couple questions for you. What player do you think will have an immediate impact on his team? And the second question is, what pick surprised you the most?
Immediate impact is an interesting question because the guys that are going to have the easiest impact are the guys generally where the skills are the most transferable, where it's and you look at a guy who's going to have, is he going to have the, I can spin this a couple of different ways. Because Stauskas is going to have an impact simply because he can shoot the ball.
Right.
So he's going to have an impact. But, I mean, I suppose I have to say Jabari Parker. He's the guy they wanted. You haven't heard a person out there say anybody other than Jabari Parker is the most NBA-ready guy.
Right.
And even in a system that emphasizes team at Duke, he still had, 19-8? For his numbers.
Right. He's solid.
I think you have to say Jabari as far as the most impact next year.
I like, looking through these picks, and I kind of look at the top. I look at the first round, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you look at guys that automatically, I look at the Spurs and go, okay, they got Kyle Anderson from UCLA. Wonder what they're thinking about with him. Because you just know how good the organization has been when it comes to drafting people and putting them in positions so they're successful. But as I look down this list, Shabazz Napier really kind of jumps out at me because he's going to get an opportunity to play right away. Because, again, we'll get into the LeBron James and the Miami Heat free agency thing in a little bit, but he's already better than Norris Cole and Mario Chalmers.
Yeah, and Chalmers is likely not coming back.
Exactly. So I look at him and go, okay. I also look at a guy like, pardon me, I also look at a guy like, maybe Gary Harris.
Julius Randle. is another guy I think would be really high on. He'd probably be my second choice behind Parker, would be Julius Randle.
I look at Gary Harris because of the Bulls and the fact they need scoring, and Gary Harris is a shooting guard. Maybe he can shoot well. Maybe he's going to get an opportunity to come off the bench and be that instant offense kind of player, like a Ben Gordon was for him a while back. I like the one that Julius Randle you said, and Randle's going to Los Angeles. You're playing with some good veterans in L.A. You're going to learn pretty well, but you're also going to have an opportunity to kind of cut your own cloth, if you
know,
will.
And you talk about, if you talk about scoring, I mean, I think, you know, Dougie McBuckets is probably the guy who's going to, because Harris, he didn't end up with the Bulls, did he?
Yep.
I don't think that's accurate.
Gary Ho. Oh, no, he ended up with Denver.
Yeah. So,
oh, I read that wrong because I was looking at Tyler Ennis and it said Phoenix Suns from Washington.
Yeah.
Gary Harris was drafted by the
Bulls looking,
from Denver, so take that away.
Yeah, if you're looking at the Bulls, it's Dougie McBuckets. Yeah,
okay, that makes more sense.
And he's going to have, he has the chance to have an impact as well, because all the things you said about Gary Harris, I think, are even better applicable to McDermott, because they can, you know, if anybody can hide him on defense, it's going to be either Popovich or Thibodeau. Thibodeau's going to be able to do that. If they get Derrick Rose back, you get him spacing the floor for Rose, he should be able to get some open shots. Jimmy Butler, you got some people there.
The guy that I like the best out of all these people, though, all these picks, that he might not have an immediate impact, and I didn't put it as part of the question, but I like the most, T.J. Warren by the Phoenix Suns, because T.J. Warren was a guy that could score, and he was, to me, a very underrated player at NC State. I'm a big ACC guy because of the University of North Carolina.
Sure.
And I watched him play, and it was just his ability to find a way to score was pretty spectacular. And I just really liked his demeanor on the court. I liked the way he went about his business. He wasn't flashy. He wasn't arrogant, brogadacious.
What?
I like T.J. Warren.
What did you just say? Brogadacious?
I don't think that's the way you say it.
No, that is. It would be braggadocious.
Braggadocious.
Wow.
I thought I was going to drop a cool word. Would it be?
Put the thesaurus back in your pocket.
Oh, my goodness. Ugh.
Hang on. Wrong, 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 wrong.
Ugh. Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyways, I like T.J. Warren. Now, the other part of this question was, what pick surprised you the most?
Oh, that's easy. That's Joel Embiid to the Sixers.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Why?
Because if they were gonna do something with Embiid, they just did this last year with Nerlens Noel. I would be surprised if Embiid plays this next year.
I would be too, but still.
I mean, It surprised me that they weren't, if they were going to do that, that they wouldn't have, I thought they would trade that pick. I really did. You would have thought that there was somebody else that was in love enough with Embiid to give them something for it and to just do that same thing again to the Sixers fan base. I mean, you want to talk about trying to sell tickets. Oh, boy. I mean, they drafted, you know, Embiid, then a guy that, you know, Saric, who's going to be overseas for at least a year, if not more likely 2 years.
Right.
And then they got, what, 5 second-round picks?
Well, and I was looking at this, too. They traded a couple. Obviously, Elfrid Payton, they drafted, but they traded him to Orlando.
Who everyone loved. All the experts love Payton.
There's a guy here that I cannot pronounce his name. From Serbia as well.
Sure.
They drafted 54th, and they traded him to San Antonio.
Nemanja.
Yep. And then you have Russ Smith, who they drafted in the second round as well, and they traded him to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then KJ McDaniels, who, you know, whatever. You know, you look at this team, they're still so far away for the Sixers, so why not try to get Twin Towers, if you will?
Because it's not really the way the NBA is right now.
But yeah,
I mean, you know, if you're trying to pull the, well, we're going to zig while everyone else zags, okay, but,
you know, everybody wants to talk about three-point shooting and spraying the ball around. That's all well and good.
It is, because that's what's won the last 3 NBA finals.
But here's the beautiful thing about
four NBA finals.
Here's the beautiful thing about having two guys in the middle that can block shots, that can protect the rim. You don't have to worry about getting burned. And then you don't also have to worry about being a help defender. You can go, I'm going to stay on my guy, because we have two defenders in the paint that can control the rim. And so you're able to do that. And along with the fact that you have some sort of, you can still play a zone defense in a way where these guys float. Now they still have two responsibilities.
Sure.
But they can still float a little bit and go, all right, we're protecting the rim. That's our main objective here.
And I get that. I mean, I understand it. It's just that I'll be curious to see if it works or if they actually follow through with it or if maybe they're thinking, you know what? We just drafted a big guy who just had foot surgery and was out of the NCAA tournament because he had a back issue. Yeah, he may be the most talented guy, but between Nerlens Noel and Embiid, we're hoping one of them stays healthy. So we're just going to roll the dice that one of them ends up being all right.
If that is the fact that they're going to roll the dice on one, then that was a dumb pick, which again would lead me to see you going, why draft him there? The pick that I find the most surprising is not my Raptors, although a bit crazy.
It's up there.
It is up there. Mitch McGarry, to me, is one that I find odd because the Oklahoma City Thunder already have a guy that does essentially the same thing.
Steven Adams.
Yeah. So why get McGarry, a guy who didn't play at all his last season of college because of injury, and then he was smoking dope?
Yes, he was.
What are we doing here? What are we thinking? I mean,
maybe they're going to use him to try to recruit Josh Howard, Mario Chalmers.
I see what you're doing there. But you see what I'm saying is that if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder,
I don't disagree with you there at all.
You're what? A series away from being in the NBA Finals, yes. Obviously. What was your biggest thing? Ibaka being hurt was your biggest concern, but did you guys have a three-point specialist?
Here,
I mean, did you have a guy who could shoot threes?
Yeah, here's the other
PJ thing. PJ Harrison was there at 21.
The argument you could make with Mitch McGarry is, well, we're getting rid of Kendrick Perkins. He's going to be gone. So we want another big body to fill some of those minutes.
Okay.
I don't know if I agree with it. There's the argument that you could make.
I get that argument.
That we need another big guy.
I do. I think that if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, you go, we need scoring off the bench. We need a guy who can come in and just go, I'm going to shoot. I mean, James Harden-like. You know, I'm just going to play offense, not worry about defense. PJ Harrison. Now, I get the off-the-court troubles. I understand that. That's the reason he fell so far to 26th. And Charlotte got a great pick with him, I believe. If he can clean that up, there's a guy that – there it is, PJ Harrison. I think PJ Harrison, to be Nostradamus here and try to come up with some kind of, you know, futuristic thing, I think he's going to have problems in Charlotte. I think he had off-the-court problems at North Carolina. Charlotte, same state.
Too close to home.
Too close to home. You know, you would have rather him been in Oklahoma City, frankly, if you want to pick some more – because Oklahoma City is a really nondescript town. Yeah. I mean, you can have your posse follow you if you will, but you're talking about being with a team that is ready to win and ready to win right now with some leaders and guys that aren't going to put up with your crap. Might have been the best for him. Now he's at Charlotte, a team that is really young, that is really finding themselves in the Eastern Conference, and he's close to home. I don't know if it's a good spot for him to go.
That's fair.
So just look for that to happen. NBA draft overall, though, after this year, we'll see if it ends up being the draft that was predicted to be going into the 2013-2014 season.
Sure.
That it was just going to be the greatest draft ever. You know, greatest draft since LeBron. You know, as the seasons wore on or the season wore on, you kind of notice, well, you know, Wiggins really can't shoot.
Well, you know,
Jabari Parker can do a lot of things, but I just don't know if he can do one thing great. And Aaron Gordon's really athletic, but he can't shoot. He can't do much of anything offensively.
We like to pick apart these guys.
Oh, and of course. The other thing, too, is I'm surprised neither of us mentioned the guy from Australia that the Jazz
Dante Exum.
Yeah, picked up. He hasn't played organized ball for a year.
Yeah.
He's just sat out the last year. And he shot up the draft boards, by the way.
Yep,
exactly. Instead of going down.
Because now we talk about what we don't know instead of, well, here's what we do know that he can't do. We talk about what Exum might be able to do.
Right, that's... Here we go. Yeah, good times. All right, we'll get to the World Cup now. Simple question. Are you going to watch the USA play Belgium on Tuesday?
Maybe. The only reason I watched the Portugal match. It's not a game. It's a match, Daniel.
It's a game.
It's a match. And the reason I watched that was because I had the girlfriend over, and she said, hey, we should watch the soccer match. which my other option, if she was in control of the TV, would probably be Kardashians. Kardashians, soccer. I'm going to take soccer. Yeah, I'm going to take soccer.
Smart move.
It was actually relatively enjoyable. I didn't pay attention the entire time, but when they scored that last goal in extra time, that was pretty incredible. That was a pretty incredible moment. It was. It was fun. So if she happens to be over, then yeah, we might end up watching the game. Otherwise, if it's just me, no.
I'm going to watch it. I'll be on air. But I'm going to watch it. And I'm going to be sharing. I'm going to try to wear a red, white, and blue something.
Okay. Thong?
No.
Speedo? No?
No, not a Speedo, not a thong. Neither of those are comfortable to me.
Okay.
Not that I'd know.
Okay.
They don't appear to be comfortable. I don't think they'd be comfortable.
Sure.
Couple more things to get to. We have three more things to get to. First is...
You've got mail.
Yeah.
Marcus from Mayville has written into the podcast on the comment section at KFGO.com. Here's what he was talking about when it came to the NBA related.
Okay.
I don't think he was that good last year. And I believe he's speaking to Eric Spoelstra, head coach of the Miami Heat. The whole Heat organization got bailed out by Ray Allen in Game 6, or it would have been 1-4 in the Big 3 era. I don't think Spoelstra is bad, but I don't think he can coach the Eagles like you guys mentioned. A guy like Doc Rivers can. We were talking about LeBron James and where he could possibly go, mm-hmm. or Carmelo Anthony. I've never got that, man, the Heat are really lucky they've got Eric Spoelstra as their head coach. It's just been, well, they've got LeBron and you don't. He's a good coach, don't get me wrong, but he's just not the type of guy to coach this type of star power. All great teams have coach that makes a difference. This team doesn't, if you compare Spoelstra to coaches of other great teams. Okay. I'll answer that by asking a question.
Sure.
Which doesn't make sense, but
sure.
We'll go with it. Do the Heat go out and look for a new coach if the Big 3 come back?
No. No. No.
Why?
Who are you going to get that's better? This dude has won 2 out of the last 3 titles. You say, well, it was LeBron. Oh, they got bailed out by Ray Allen. Okay, every team that's won a title gets some breaks. They all do.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them does. And to say that, oh, it's, you know what, he's just, last year it was, man, did you see the way he shuffled the lineups, the changes that he made, playing Shane Battier, and then he got good minutes out of this guy. My gosh, he was one of the most underrated coaches in the league last year. This year, he's got older guys. He's got a worse Dwayne Wade. He's got Shane Battier, who was key for them last year. Just he was done. He had nothing left. And now, all of a sudden, he's a bad coach. Just, Marcus, you're better than that. You're better than that. You've provided us with some great content. You're better than that.
Please, no! 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 No!
Big three. Final question on the NBA.
Okay.
Do they come back to the Miami Heat?
Yes. Because there's just, LeBron's going to look around. They had their dinner last night, cracked some lobster tails, threw back a couple.
Was Jameis Winston there?
That
was crab legs.
Well done. Some sort of crustacean, yeah. And they look and he's like, well, man. Do I really want to go to the Western Conference?
No.
Not. I mean, I could go to L.A. I could go to Houston. Houston, I'm not enamored with Dwight Howard. The Clippers, if I was going to go anywhere, I'd maybe go to the Clippers. But then I still got to try to. Now I got to put up with Durant in a 7-game series and the Spurs potentially in a 7-game series. Yeah, that doesn't sound real fun. And who's going to be left on their roster if I go there? You know, what are they going to have to do to their roster to fit me in there unless I'm taking the Michael Jordan, like, $1 million contract just to go win? East, the Bulls, are they going to have enough? Again, unless you're taking a massive, massive, massive discount. Chicago, I don't know if it's Derrick Rose. If Derrick Rose isn't healthy, then, my gosh, it might be harder to score than it was with this Miami team. Not joining Indiana, where else are you going? I don't see the better option that's out there.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to end up back in Miami, and I think he's going to convince the other two to take a discount so they can try to bring in. I don't think they go the Anthony route. I think they go in, Let's find the shooters. Let's find the role players to go along with it.
I think you're right. We just found out today that, or at least it's being reported today, that Bosch and Wade have opted out of their contracts. I agree. Yes. I think they all come back to Miami. I think that you're right. They're going to fill in holes instead of try to go out and get another superstar.
I agree.
At this point, we don't know what kind of money they're going to take to come back to Miami. So if they take a significant amount less and you're going, oh, there's a lot of money left over for role players and maybe, just maybe, you know, what's his name? Anthony.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. It's fun to talk about. I don't
far down the road. Far down the road. Do they sacrifice this season in order to have some money? They just, like, get a lot of one-year contracts with players they know aren't going to really do that well.
Okay.
To have Kevin Love come to them as a free agent.
Oh, goodness.
How about that team?
Can we get into one more thing though before?
We got plenty of stuff going because I got more mail here to bring to you.
With Pat Riley, we haven't had a podcast since his epic press conference.
Oh yeah,
Pat Riley saying, you know what? When the going gets tough, you need to have the guts to stay. You mean like when the exact opposite pitch that you gave LeBron when you convinced him to go there, like what you did when you went from New York to Miami as a coach in the early 2000s.
Right.
Really, really interesting press conference from Riley talking about the exact opposite of things that have happened that he's been directly related with in the not so distant past. I found that immensely entertaining.
What I find entertaining is that he openly denies that LeBron runs this organization when it's obvious to all of us that LeBron is the organization for the Miami Heat. I mean, Napier was a guy that LeBron loved, coveted. Who did the Miami Heat get? Napier. And I believe they traded up to get him, didn't they?
Yes.
Traded up a couple picks to get him.
Yes.
Yeah. LeBron James is running this thing. LeBron James is running the NBA, essentially, when it comes to roster moves. Because there are teams out there that are going, if we create a good enough roster around him with enough room that maybe, just maybe, he'll come here. Maybe he's going back to the Heat. He's going back to the Heat. So, oh, hang on. I've got another one of these things.
Wait. You've got mail.
More mail. Tyler from Tahiti.
Yeah.
He's emailed in. He has some things to talk about. First, U.S. soccer tie between Port. Here's a good question that we didn't talk about. The tie with Portugal was basically a loss. We'll stop there. Do you feel like it was a loss against Portugal?
In the moment, it felt like it, yes. That when you looked at the landscape of things the next day or two, no.
Okay. The second question I have, because this is a little bit behind, because the United States ended up losing to Germany. Is the United States losing to Germany but still getting into the round of 16 different from, say, the Minnesota Vikings losing on the last weekend of the NFL season, but another team loses and they get into the playoffs?
It's the exact same thing. And you know what you say when that happens? Well, take it.
Exactly.
Give me the ticket. Give me the chip and a chair. Give me in.
Thank you. All right. Bison football is only like 9 weeks away.
Yeah.
You should come up with a list of players to watch that haven't played much.
Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz. That's it. That's the list.
Yeah, I can't. I can't think of anybody else. Carson Wentz is the guy to watch.
Carson Wentz.
We can talk all week long. We can talk all month long. We can talk all year long about the depth of the defensive line, the offensive line, now with the loss of an offensive lineman in the secondary. So Carson Wentz is the guy to watch. How he plays, how he runs this offense, the choices he makes, Carson Wentz. Also something that we got to get to at some point, pick up basketball.
Yeah, we never had it happen yet. Yeah.
We have to do it.
Yeah.
Tyler believes that he can still beat me, and he hasn't picked up a ball in like a year.
Okay.
He still thinks he can beat me. He dominated me back in the day at Bathgate.
Okay.
At the Blacktops in Bathgate. No, you couldn't, Tyler, because I've seen the addition to you. And there's no way you could carry that kind of addition and beat me.
I like that.
Sorry. So I would take you down. I will take Brad down eventually, Tyler, from Tahiti. Thank you very much. Ongoing wager.
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up here.
Yeah.
What's the tally? Because as I look through this, we gave ourselves a baseball prediction back in March.
Yep.
And that was one of the last ones we had, the NFL draft one. Yeah. Going through here, we looked back.
I counted them all up. I counted everything up.
What's the tally?
Here's the thing. The two ones in the draft, I don't know what I might have been drunk then. I'm not sure. Because I even said in the moment, I'm probably going to get these wrong, but I just feel like doing something wrong. Or I just feel like doing something with it, and I got them both wrong.
Right.
The final tally is 22 things right for Pinto.
Yep.
And 22 things right for the White Shadow.
So the two that you gave me at the end.
Tied it up. Yep.
So that makes the pickup basketball game that we're going to have all that much more important.
That's true. Should we just say to heck with the baseball stuff and make that the tiebreaker?
We should.
I think we should.
Okay. Now, the final note that we previewed last week and we teased with today, the podcast is going to go on a hiatus, we'll say.
Okay.
The reason being is I've been given the opportunity to host a Saturday morning show on 740 The Fan.
Very good for you. That's awesome.
Thank you. It's called Fan Sports Saturday. It's going to start July 5th. It's going to run from 8 to 10. Hopefully they let me have it as long as possible. That's why we say hiatus with the podcast, because I'm going to find a way to talk sports.
Yes.
So for right now, we're going to put the podcast on the hiatus.
And if all things work out, honestly, hopefully the podcast doesn't come back, because I want you to be successful with this radio show.
And I do too. Now, that doesn't mean the Pinto and the White Shadow are forever going to go away. We're going to try to make sure and
we're going to go off on a nice vacation together.
Yes. Yep.
Hold hands on the beach.
Oh, yeah. We're going to do all those things.
Yes.
We're going to have the Rocky montage with the Apollo Creed when they're running on the beach.
Absolutely.
We're going to do all of that stuff. What I hope to have happen during the Fan Sports Saturday show is a segment when we can with Brad, where him and I sit in the studio and we have three topics, a local, a regional, and a national one, and we just kind of rattle off our thoughts about it. It'll be fun. It'll be something that I know I'm going to try to incorporate in the show. But again, because of that show on 740, we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus for the Pinto White Shadow Show. It's been fun. I honestly had no idea what was going to happen when we started this thing. I didn't know how many people were going to listen. I just wanted to have fun with it, and we have.
Yes.
We have had a ton of fun doing this. I've had great feedback from people that I know. Not people I don't know.
Sure.
But people I know saying, hey, I enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. We thank Marcus from Mayville. We thank Tyler from wherever he is this particular week.
Doug in the office of admission at NDSU, he was a loyal listener every week. Preacher Mike in South Dakota, thank you for listening. So we got a few people that are loyal listeners. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not the end of Pinto and the White Shadow, but for right now the podcast is going to be on a hiatus.
Yeah. So, and even when I can't stop in studio, July 5th, next Saturday, I won't be in town. I'm calling in, and that's the fun part about doing the radio show is no matter what, I'm going to find a way to be on.
And we're going to try to make sure that if I'm ever away on a certain Saturday, if I need a guest host, we have the White Shadow on the back. He's the first. He's at the top of a list of one.
Of guest hosts.
For guest hosts right now.
Perfect. I like it.
For the Fan Sports
Saturday. I'm going to ask you the same question for this radio spot that I'll be doing with you once a week. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked you when I started.
What is that?
That was music. Why did you cut me off with music?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off with music.
The same question I asked you was, how much am I getting paid?
The exact same amount that you got paid to do this podcast.
So I'm getting paid nothing?
Yeah.
I'm in.
Okay.
I'm still in.
Well, good. I'm glad.
It's the exact same question. It's the first question I asked you when you approached me about the podcast last week. How much am I getting paid? You said nothing. I said I'm in.
And perfect.
I'm in again. It's been a blast. I love doing this. And hopefully we're at least mildly we're entertaining. You're going to be the Dan Patrick to my Rich Eisen.
That's what I hope.
Yeah.
That's what I hope. So, again, if you want to listen to this last podcast, make sure and check it out at kfgo.com.
Well, they've already listened to this last podcast.
Oh, yeah. I suppose I don't have to go through this rap. It's such a habit.
End.
If you want to follow Brad Jones, find him at...
at the Bison Guy.
On Twitter, you can find me at PintoKFGO. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and we
will... Fan Sports Saturday, July 5th, and every Saturday for the foreseeable future.
Mark it down. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy whatever you're doing today. One thing I